Welcome to Down Memory Lane, a series of podcasts featuring older folk from the Braes of Lochaber community whose memories stretch back in time. Podcast 4, Colonel Charles Cameron.
I have been asked about my life, early life at Auchnacarry. In fact, I didn't spend much time there. My very early life, before I went to prep school, I don't remember much about. But after that, summer holidays were usually spent at Nairn because Auchnacarry was let for the whole of August and September. There were one or two bad years for my father when the house wasn't let, and then we had a very happy summer holiday there. In the winter and Easter holidays, we used to go to Clunes because it was much warmer and central heating in Auchnacarry was almost non-existent. Until I was 9 and went to my prep school, I lived in the nursery with the governess, Miss Fairbird, always known as Benny, who was with us all of my early life. And she taught me up to the standard of going to school. And, of course, I didn't have any meals in the dining room. They were all in the nursery. We had Norman McCrae, who was butler, come piper. And in the summertime, when we had any guests, he would play the pipes in the morning to wake us up. He used to play Hey Johnny Cope. And then he would play when it was time to dress for dinner. And he might play, if we had guests, he would play round the table after dinner. He also acted as a butler and looked after everything but my father. And his wife, Mrs. McCrae, was my mother's maid, looked after all her dresses. In addition, of course, we had a cook and a housemaid and, I suppose, a kitchen maid, all of whom lived in the basement. We also had a nursery maid who used to bring up the food up to the nursery. She was very often one of the local girls who just left school. Then after school, as I said, there were only occasionally summer holidays at Auchnacarry, but they were great fun. My elder brothers and sisters used to have their friends to stay, so I got to know them, and I was often allowed to do things with them. We would go fishing in the Lough Arkaig. We'd just troll for trout. And then when I got a little bit older, I can't remember how old, about 12, 13, I went out stalking. First of all, stalking the hinds, and then after a year or two, I was allowed to go out stalking stags. And I remember now getting my first hind and my first stag. I used to go fishing too with a fishing gilly called Duncan Chisholm. But I was never any good and I never caught a fish. And I therefore lost patience. And I have never been interested in fishing ever since. We had very few grouse. But we used to go out with pointers about twice a year, once on the 12th of August and once other time, and we'd be quite happy to bring back two or three brace. Auchterloo on Lough Eel was the best place for grouse. We used to go there more often than Auchnacarry, which had practically none. I remember one summer when my father hadn't let Auchnacarry, they thought they would try paying guests, and this was not a success because the family were always supposed to give up the best chairs to the guests and behave perfectly, and I'm afraid we didn't. In fact, I remember standing at the top of the stairs over the balcony with my brother Alan, chucking slippers down near where the guests were standing. So after one or two experiments, my parents decided that paying guests was not very rewarding. Summer holidays at Nairn, where we went when the house was let, was also quite good fun. I spent a lot of my time trying to play golf and tennis. We used to take different houses in Nairn. It rather shook me afterwards when I came to live at Nairn in my old age to realise that the houses we took were so large that all now become either hotels or nursing homes or something of that region. To me, they seemed quite normal at the time. But we did take our staff with us. In other words, Norman and Mrs. McCrae and a cook. There were quite a lot of other people of our own age at that time who lived in Nairn, who used to come to Nairn for their summer holidays. Most friends of Alan's and Marian's. I remember David and Shani Blair. David Blair became champion golfer, and Shani Blair became a general, and Ludwig Kennedy, who made a name for himself later, and various other people, all of whom played golf very much better than I did. Christmas was always spent at Clunes with a family. Brothers Donald always came home for it. I don't think Valerie didn't after she married, so there was Donald and Marion and Alan and myself for most of the time. And we just had the usual Christmas routine. Church in the morning and lunch and Christmas tree and so forth. In those days, we seemed to have more snow than we do now And most Christmases seemed to have we had snow. I used to go shooting with Alan. We shot rabbits. We had a ferret. And we sometimes went shooting woodcock. And we had one or two pheasants. But during this period, my father did not put down any pheasants and did not have a syndicate shoot. Earlier on, before I went to school, I remember he did have a shoot, which all the used to syndicate with some of the neighbours used to come. But during my school times, he didn't have the money to put down any pheasants. So he just got the odd one, which came from the neighbours. I wish I could remember more of the stories which my father told me, and also which my Uncle Ewan used to tell us. He was very knowledgeable about the family history. One thing I do remember concerns the silver wine cooler, which is a Dr. Carey, presumably still, in the shape of an owl. And the reason it's in the shape of an owl is because of paper my grandfather owned, along with somebody called Oliphant and Lord Wolverton. And the initials OWL made the owl, and that was the name of the paper. And when they sort of gave it up, they bought this wine cooler, which I hope is still in the possession at Auchner Carey. They also used to tell me stories about a family, aunts, great aunts, and grandmothers, and so forth. Some of which I remember, and some of which I don't. And then my aunt and my father told me about one of my aunts who married. This aunt was married to a clergyman, Veitch, and their daughter got engaged to his curate, who was called Mr. Hobbs. And my grandmother is reported to have said, "I don't mind her marrying a curate, but I do object to her marrying someone with the name of Hobbs." I wish I could remember more of the story which my Uncle Ewan told us about my great-grandmother, Lady Vere, and her son George, who became George Hubbard, and inherited the Hampden property in Hampshire. Apparently, Lady Vere was, we know, the daughter of the Earl of Buckinghamshire, and her son, her second son, her eldest son was, of course, my great-grandfather, was my grandfather, and her second son was George, and he was left the estate by the Earl of Buckinghamshire, this is my Lady Vere's brother. I think there's also some doubt about that, but I think it's brother rather than uncle. It's a staff brother. And because he didn't want to leave it to his younger brother, who was a clergyman. On further investigation, what I think really happened was the Earl of Buckingham was a naughty old man, and his younger brother, the clergyman, would probably have told him off. So he was having his own revenge, and he left it to my Uncle George. So they lived at Hampden, and George, unfortunately, didn't live long. He died in his 30s, unmarried. So the estate then went back to the clergyman. But, of course, he and his mother, Lady Vere, and father, and brothers and sisters were all buried at Hampden Church. Now, I've been to the church to see the graveyard and the memorial in the church. My Uncle Ewan was full of family scandal. For example, he used to say that my great-aunt Alma, who was the sister of my Montrose grandfather, was the illegitimate daughter of Lord Raglan, who had been commander-in-chief at Crimea, which is why she was called Alma. She later married Lord Bradalbin, but had no children. I remember visiting her when she used to live in London. One of our annual visitors to either Auchner Carey or wherever we were was my mother's sister, Aunt Nellie. We were always rather frightened of her, and we used to look upon her as a strict maiden aunt. But in fact, on looking back now, I wish we had known her better than we did. She wrote a lot of stories, which have been published in a book called Wherefore or the Why. She devoted her life to looking after her mother, my grandmother, so she never married, although I think she did have a lover called Lord Dufferin, who was killed in the Boer War. And she could paint, and she was very intrepid. She went off on journeys to North Africa, and before the First War, she went off to the Hebrides on a bicycle and recruited girls there to join the district nurse organisation. So she must have been a tough old girl. And then she got the job in 1926 as lady-in-waiting to Queen Elizabeth, Queen Mother, who was devoted to her. And she stayed with her until she retired in 19... 38, 39. And then when the war started, she used to do extra duties. I think when the war was declared, the Queen sent for her, because she wanted to have the lady-in-waiting who she knew best. And then after the war, she occasionally went to waiting. But otherwise, she became chairman of the YWCA, which meant she travelled all over Britain. I used to be amazed that she used to write so many letters when she was travelling the train. She found that the easiest way of doing things. I couldn't possibly write a letter in the train. And she lived in London at Cranmer Court, and I went up to see her there once during the war. And then, at the end of the war, she was looking forward to retiring, and she bought a house called Brain Dam near Callander, and it needed a lot of doing up. So she began doing it up, and while she was doing that, she was ill and pronounced to have cancer, from which she would die in a very short time. And in fact, the house was done up, and she only spent about one night in the house before she went to hospital for the last time. It was very sad. That was Brain Dam, which she left to whatever nephew and niece would agree to live there. I had it for a few years, but then I decided I couldn't live there permanently, so handed it back to the trustees, who then handed it over to Lilias Graham, who made it into a holiday home for the poor people in Govan, who never had any holidays, and has remained in that ever since, which I think would have pleased my aunt. My Cameron grandparents died long before I was born, but my mother's parents, my grandfather died when I was six, so I don't remember him, but I remember my grandmother very well, because she had a house in London, and when I went to prep school, which was down in Berkshire, we used to take the night train to London, and then I would go from the King's Cross to Lowndes Square, where she and Aunt Nellie lived, and they would look after me until that time came for me to be put on the school train. And then, of course, at the end of term, the reverse happened. I went to them, and then they put me on the night train for Fort William. So I remember her quite well. I looked upon her as very old and state. In fact, she wasn't all that old. I think she died when she was about 83. She made quite a name for herself in that she would travel everywhere, if she could, by bus. But of course, dowager duchesses in those days didn't normally do that. No one was allowed to smoke in her drawing room. If people wanted a cigarette, they would have to go out to the next door room, which was my Aunt Nellie's sitting room, and smoke there. I remember having sort of tea parties, and my uncles used to come up quite often to see her. She also had very strict moral ideas. She went to church every Sunday, of course, and she never forgave her nephew Ronald Graham, who married a divorced mother of five children, and he was never allowed in the house again. She lived after the outbreak of war. When the war started, she went to live with one of her nieces, Elizabeth Motion, in Hertfordshire, and along with my Aunt Nellie. And then when Aunt Nellie was called to attend to the Queen, and my mother would go down to help to look after her. And she died eventually about 1941. Going back to Auchnacarry days, we had quite a good garden. My father was very keen on rhododendrons, and was always taking people around to see the latest rhododendron he'd planted. And my mother was moderately keen on flowers, but we had quite a good gardener, very aptly called Mr. Moss. And his wife, Mrs. Moss, kept the post office, which in those days was where the Clan Museum is now. Mr. Moss was quite strict and didn't at all approve of us going in picking fruit to eat. So on a Sunday afternoon when he was off duty, my brother and I, and Alan and Marion and I, used to go in to the hothouse and pick up off a nice, rather nice peach to eat, or we'd go into the raspberries beds and eat the raspberries. Otherwise, they were kept and produced, beautifully served, on the dining room table. The walled garden was functioning in those days, where most of the fruit was kept. And outside was the flower bed. It was always known as my mother's border, herbaceous border. And when we had lunch parties on Sunday, which we quite often did, it always ended up by my father saying, "Would you like to see the garden?" And so everyone had to say yes. So he would take them around the garden. And then when they'd gone around the garden, they had to go, which was a very good way of deciding when they would have to leave. Many a Sunday I remember trailing around behind when my father showed off all the flowers and rhododendrons she had. In those days we had not only a gardener, Mr. Moss, but two assistant gardeners as well. This, of course, stopped once the war began and the commanders took over, and the garden never got back again to its original form, nor did we ever have more than one gardener for a long time after that. When we went stalking, if we were going on the North Forest, we would drive up the loch as far as Ardecky, where we would join old Alec MacDonald, who was a wonderful stalker. He used to be able to get close as anybody else could to a stag or a hind. And whilst there, he would take out another cigarette and strike up and smoke a cigarette to show how good he was. If we were going on the South Forest, we would have to take the boat, which had an outboard engine, from the bottom of the loch up to Glenmalee. And there we were joined by David Cameron, who lived up there, and went out on that part of the forest. It was quite a long, that was quite a long day. I remember one day when I was about 15, coming back very late at night, having had a long day stalking, then a long walk down the glen to where the boat was, and then on the boat down to the end of the loch, and arrived to find my family tramping at the bit, because it was the night of the Lochaber Ball, and my mother wouldn't allow them to go to the Lochaber Ball until I'd been safely located. And speak a little bit more about my early days domestically. We used to have all our meals rather late. We used to get up as children. We didn't get up till nearly 9:30, and breakfast was always at 9:30, and lunch was 1:15, and dinner about 8:15. Of course, that was in more formal times, when we were at Dr. Carey, and the few summers we were there, and summers before I went to school, I suppose. Norman McCrae, the piper, would always play in the early morning by 8:15. He would play Hey Johnny Cope and the Pipes. And then he'd play again. If we had anybody to dinner, Dr. Carey, he would play again for dressing time at 8:15. And then after dinner, very often he would play around the table. My parents didn't entertain a great deal, as far as I know. Though, here again, I say, I was at school during May and June when we were at Auchnacarry, and in July and August we were away at Nairn. But during the time I was at Auchnacarry, I don't remember much entertaining going on, because there weren't very many people to entertain, except in the summer, when we had various shooting visitors. People who'd taken shooting fairly locally, or fishing fairly locally. Sometimes we got to know them and ask them along. I remember, for example, Lord Belper, and somebody called him the Dean of Battle, and I can't remember the others at the moment. I have one rather nice story about Norman McCrae, the piper, because he came to us as a footman, I think, shortly after my parents married, about 1907, and he was with my father as a batman during the war. Well, he used to be very alcoholic, and he was very nearly getting the sack, and my mother got hold of him and said to him, Norman, if you give up the drink, I'll give up the drink. So they made a bargain that they would give up the drink. And after that, my mother never took any drink. I don't know whether she took drink before that, but she certainly didn't take any drink after that. And Norman used to go through the paraphernalia always of offering her a drink before dinner. And my mother always has said no. And I used to wonder why Norman used to offer my mother a drink, knowing perfectly well she was saying no. And that was the reason. It was a sort of pledge between them. And of course, after that, Norman never had a drink either. My mother was a strange mixture of being broad-minded and rather evangelical in religion. For example, when we were young, she didn't approve of us playing cards on Sunday. And so on a Sunday evening, we always played paper games, consequences, and mountains, rivers, and lakes, and things like that. She only just approved of us playing tennis on a Sunday. And of course, she was very strict about going to church. And when we were children, if we didn't go to church, she would collect us all round her in the drawing room, and we would read the Bible. They always went to church whenever they could. And my mother, when she was in town or somewhere like that, would go to early communion. And during the war, when they lived just opposite the cathedral, I think she spent a lot of time in the cathedral praying, which was obviously of some success, because all her sons and sons-in-law came through the war successfully. We were quite low church, and communion was only taken in those days about 4 or 5 times a year on main festivals. The rest of the time it was always at matins, and we used to leave at the end of matins. My mother had no interest at all in country pursuits, and she just stayed at Auchnacarry because her husband and family were there. And as soon as my father died, she was off to Edinburgh first, and then Glasgow, where she was much, much happier. I think she must have found various lunch and dinner parties rather boring, very boring, in fact, because so much of the talk was of how the fishing was going and how the shooting was going and the stalking and so forth, in which she had no interest whatsoever. And very seldom did she find people with whom she could discuss subjects which she was interested in, such as music or politics or things like that, things to do with the art. My father, on the other hand, was rather an austere man. For example, we would never dreamt of calling him Daddy. He was always Father to us, and he didn't take really much notice of us until we grew up. Nevertheless, we were all very fond of him, and he was fond of us. But it wasn't a relationship which you find now between fathers and sons. During the summers, holidays when we were at Auchnacarry, my brother, sisters, particularly Alan and Marion, had a lot of their friends to stay. I was never allowed any of my friends. Not that I had many that I wanted to stay, but I used to tag on with the others and enjoy that. The sort of friends they had was, well, Liz Vaughan Lee, whom Alan married eventually, and Fanny Fraser, and Peggy Campbell Preston. They were all friends of Marion's. And before that, when I was a very small boy, before I went to school, I remember Violet having her boyfriends to stay, and I used to see them sometimes. I used to see them from the nursery. And I was also aware of Donald having various girlfriends to stay, and wondering which one would end up his wife. Looking back at it now, I suppose I had a rather lonely and sheltered existence, but whether that did me any harm or not, I don't know. I certainly have no memory of being unhappy.
Down Memory Lane was brought to you by the West Highland Museum and Nevis Radio. The recordings are based on interviews conducted for the Braes Community newspaper between 2012 and 2021. A book accompanying the series has been published by the Braes team and can be purchased from the museum or the Highland Bookshop in the High Street, Fort William.